Oh, I found a new combo.
Oh?
That might be the most evil thing I've ever done.
That's awesome.
In magic podcasting.
That is awesome. When do we see it?
I've shown it to Charles and Thack and Nick. I played it against them, and I told them not to tell you what it does.
Oh, no.
Because you have to experience it.
Okay.
But I put tutors in the deck to make the combo happen.
Excellent.
And then I put a couple other combos in there.
Are you going all combo on us?
Well, I think this deck is just to prove a point. Tutors are evil.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I played a couple of games yesterday, and I used tutors. Because, man, these guys are
boop
spiky. Holy
boop.
It's like I realized playing with them, I'm like, wow, I play so many limits on how I build decks because I don't want to ruin the game for everyone. And these guys are just like,
boop
you, best game is when I'm having fun. Yeah,
boop
you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is that kind of deck.
You know, maybe we should let our hair down at some point and just build decks like that and say, this is not a 75% episode or deck. Mm. Well, I can't wait to see your combo.
Yeah. It wins by submission.
Excellent.
Like jujitsu.
Yeah. I cannot wait to see it. Tutors are evil. Get your laugh muscles ready, folks.
Okay, I am ready to laugh.
I am ready to laugh. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And Sean had something come up at the last minute. And we are Commander in. Music. We got the music.
Commandarin.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way. But never, Nate, never, ever do we talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, iTunes, and mtgcast.com. And actually Skype by searching for Commandarin MTG Podcast.
Yeah, we got to just condense that. Just say all the social medias.
All the social medias. We will say it from now on. But this time, just one last time, can we leave them all in?
Yeah. Oh, you forgot, did you say podbay.fm?
Podbay.fm. Podbay.fm.
Are we on Stitcher? I don't know if we are.
We're not on Stitcher.
Oh, take that, Stitcher.
This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. Don't we, Nate?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about you. Not you, Nate.
We're not.
The community.
Oh.
Well, we'll talk about you, too.
Okay.
But we're actually doing a mailbag episode where all the mail we've received, I should say some of the mail we received over the last few months, we'll read excerpts from them and answer your questions or answer your concerns, depending on what they are. It's probably better just to say quements, questions, comments. Thank you, Nerdist.
I'm not going to say that.
No. Oh. Okay. But first, some news.
Mm-hmm.
The Command Zone podcast just celebrated their 100th episode. The live stream for it. They did a whole live stream thing, Nate.
I saw.
Oh. Was it good? I didn't have an opportunity to watch it.
It was a good episode. They were brewing a deck on the air and, well, in my opinion, the deck kind of turned into a mess because they started out with Cleric Tribal, which is fun, but then in the later phases when they were making cuts, they kind of forgot they were doing Cleric Tribal and just shifted over to good stuff. They left a lot of the tribal stuff in, but not enough clerics to support it, in my opinion.
Oh. Well, brewing is hard enough as it is. I can't even imagine brewing live on the air.
Live.
That was, so I was in the background playing games with some of the other people they play games with.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hear part of it, and I could hear when they started shifting kind of away from cleric tribal and going more for life gain. And it sounded very interesting, but in the meantime, I was mostly having my teeth kicked in by Craig Blanchett, Vincent Trong, and Wes, whose last name I can't remember right now. I'm sorry, Wes, but everybody's on Twitter there. And we tweeted a few images from the game itself. Had a blast, and I played Karametra, Mimeoplasm, and Zergo.
Yeah, I saw Zergo one.
Yeah, surprisingly. It was a very strange game. Very strange game, but Zergo did manage to pull it out. Many thanks to Vincent for playing the Dictate of the Twin Gods and allowing Zergo to do double damage, and then when I played Savage Beating, he actually did quadruple damage, which was 28 commander damage in one attack. So
that's a bunch.
Yay, Vincent. It is. It is. I felt a little bit like you, Nate.
Hmm?
Well, you know, doing a whole lot of damage all in one swing. Granted, it's no 799 points of damage in one swing.
823.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right. I went to negative 799. 823 points of damage. Brutal. The decks I played are available on deckstats.net.
All right.
So, hey, Nate, guess what time it is?
Daylight savings time?
It is daylight savings time. But in the context of this particular episode, it's time for our first prize giveaway this episode. Yes, folks. We are going to give away prizes to folks we randomly select from our iTunes and Podbay FM reviews.
Five-star reviews. Podbay
FM reviews. The five-star reviews. That's right. If you gave us a five-star review on there, you've entered our contest. We're going to randomly select one of you and give away 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. You must have a United States, Canadian, or Great British address. And I don't mean, you know, that the address has to be in Great Britain. It just has to be British and be really great, like the Bottoms or Hedge Wilshire Tottenham.
Or Gloucestershireburg.
Yes. Gloucester.
Sound it out.
Shire. Berg. So, all right. So here's our first listener. So we generated a random number, and from top down, sorted by most recent, we'll count down from there. Ah, fortunately, our first winner is number 3. And so we scroll down. Close. It's Z Commander. Congratulations, Z Commander. The title is Laughs to Removal by Z Commander. My favorite podcast for my favorite MTG format. If you love Commander, you'll love Phil, Sean, and he meant Nate. I remember this one now. Talk through way the best format in Magic. Warning, do not operate heavy machinery or vehicles because you'll laugh so hard. There you have it, folks. Do not operate heavy machinery or vehicles while listening to the podcast. Those of you in your cars right now, I'm very sorry to say that you are risking your lives.
Mm-hmm. And of those around you.
Yes, and of those around you. So please listen safely. And hopefully, Z Commander, you have a United States, Canadian, or Great British address. Please write to us at cast@commanderandmtg.com to give us your address, and I'll get those packs out to you right away. 3 whole packs. And one more bit of news. Of course, we have our Patreon. How did we settle on that? We need a pronunciation show, don't we?
You could say Patreon, but then the word pay is in there.
So we want them to think the word pat is in there.
Yeah, like pat on the head.
Yeah, and like they're patting us on the heads.
Yeah.
As it were. Well, special thanks to all the folks who donated to us at the Patreon. A special call out here to the $10 donators. And Nate, did you know, did I tell you, Nate, maybe I didn't, that we're hosting a chat with these folks at the $10 and above level, and they're going to help us figure out what we should talk about from episode to episode?
Oh, is that what I've been doing?
Have you?
Is that what that group is for?
No, well, not the deck testing group. We're actually going to have a special Patreon chat with these folks. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to meeting a bunch of them. I know you are too.
Maybe they'll drag a bunch of their decks in and have us tech them.
Mm. Yes, that would be a terrible experience, wouldn't
Please
it?
Please fix my deck. It's wounded.
My deck is wounded. What a horrible experience that would be to see all new decks and maybe even have to play test against them just to be sure. All right. On to our main topic. I should mention, throughout the show, we're going to stop and give away more packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. Our next one will also be from iTunes, and then we'll switch to Podbay. And we'll see how many of those we can get through before the universe implodes. Is that really the problem? Universe implosion?
No, humanity is going to be dead long before that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. You want to start us off, Nate? These first two are from the Twitter.
All right. Matt Tilling at Tyrene Flame asks, on basic lands in three color decks, I run between 18 to 25 in each of mine. Is that unusually high? Is that unusually high? What do you guys run instead? Let me load up some decks. I'm going to look.
Yeah, I'm looking now too.
Okay, I'm loading up Caridor Shadowborn Apostles, and it has 22 basic lands.
You've run 22 basic lands in that?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Animar has much, much fewer. It has 11. Jaleva has 11. So let's see.
That does not sound unreasonable.
Yeah, why is Caridor so high?
Oh, but it's green as well, so you must be fetching a lot of basic lands.
I'm not sure that's it. I think that it might just be a budget attempt at the deck.
Well, my Mimeoplasm, and in fact, I think this is the one that I brought with me yesterday. Behind the curtains, folks, we're recording this on Sunday, right after the Command Zone 100th. My Mimeoplasm has 8 forests, 7 islands, and 5 swamps, so 20 basic lands. That's actually, for me, that's a lot. But again, I know that I'm fetching basics.
See, Mardu Allies has 11. Let's see. Marquesa Infect has 15.
My Riku deck has 9.
What else was I looking for? Oh, Merebear.
Ugh, Merebear.
Merebear has 12.
Wow.
So why is Caridor so high? Yeah, it looks like Caridor was an attempt at a budget deck. So, let's see. So if we're going to make a basic rule of thumb off the cuff and use metaphors with other body parts, how many can we cram in there? Let's see. Anyway, so like if I have a three-color deck with 12 basic lands, that's assuming that there are some triplets of dual lands that are taking up slots that would otherwise be using basic lands.
Got it. And you put them in as triplets in a three-color for the obvious reason.
Yes.
Yeah. And that includes things like the temples from the Theros block and old school dual lands and shock lands?
I don't like the temples very often. I do like the check lands. I like the shock lands. I played the dual lands sometime, the original dual lands in online, but I don't actually own any of them.
You might not want to admit to that. Right. Because for you, you're playtesting a lot.
Yeah. But when one card, it costs the same as the entire rest of your deck, that's just stupid.
It is stupid. This goes back to the argument against the reserve list, but I don't know. I think a slow phase in of all cards on the reserve list is in order, so hopefully that'll happen over time and maybe before we die.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I have 14 basic lands in Rune Manifest Destiny. And let's see, I'm going to look at Marath. Marath is probably the craziest of my decks. Oh, yeah, yeah. Marath has 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an incredible vulnerability, but at the same time, the flexibility you get from using all the dual lands and the other special lands and the utility you get from them is very important. Marath needs a lot of support in that sense. But it's fairly effective. So, Matt, hopefully that answered your question. Here's the next one. Bruce Lee / Freshly Squeezed Bruce, who is at reserve list, writes, what happened to Sean's eyebrows? Did he lose them during his initiation into the Dimir? Is that the first step to becoming a shape-shifting master of disguise?
I've wondered that question myself, and I don't know the answer.
Well, I know the answer, and the short answer is yes. And really, that's all I can say about it. We don't want to blow his cover.
Or his eyebrows.
Or his eyebrows. But let's just say that in Sean's profession, eyebrows are too much of a liability.
It might be the pomade. If he's pomading his eyebrows, then it might... If he uses a flesh tone pomade, that might... Yeah. That's my theory.
No, I think he said he does use a flesh tone pomade. I mean, we'll have to ask Sean when he gets back on the show and we remember it. I'm sure that, though, the first time Sean hears this will be when it's already dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And he will appreciate that we kept his cover.
Yeah. Although he might be Orzhov now. We don't know.
Oh, right. So many white-black decks recently. Well, maybe that's part of his shape-shifting.
Ooh. Sneaky.
This could all be a ploy. He's fainting Orzhov.
Wow.
Yeah, clever.
He's doing a Palpatine gambit.
Is that a thing?
It is now.
Excellent. You want to read this next one?
All right.
What do we call this one?
This is a long one.
It's an email we received a while ago.
Okay, Ronnie Tabak says, you guys are spiky. He says, hi, guys.
That's our title for it, to be clear. He doesn't actually say it. Oh, wait, no, he does.
Hi, guys. I've recently discovered your podcast, and as a rabid fan of Commander, not to mention being a Brit, I've really enjoyed what you do.
Oh.
You've been both entertaining and helpful, especially your Value Green episode that found some gems that I hadn't yet considered. I'm halfway through the Value Black episode, which is a much better color, in my opinion. And while I'm enjoying it, it brought to a head an issue that's been bothering me for several episodes.
Dun, dun, dun.
You often say something along the lines of, this is so powerful, I can't see why any deck of color X wouldn't run card Y. And this just tells me that my friends and I build commander decks very differently from you.
Ronnie's letter does go on a bit, so we've excerpted some of the salient points, and we'll address them one by one. So this first one's about budget, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's 3 points of why you might not want to play a card in a deck. One is budget, another's theme, and another is fun. So in the budget section, your discussion about what counts as a value card was interesting, but I flat out disagree that $10 is value. Why run Phyrexian Arena when you can run Underworld Connections?
So he says when he builds a deck... he runs like 2 to 3 cards that are above $5. And so in email, I replied to Ronnie. I said, that Ronnie should think about deck building as kind of a continuum, not a single practice everybody engages in, right? And on one end of the spectrum, you have the Commander's Brew approach, which is, the Commander's Brew, which everybody should be listening to, builds decks to a $50 mark. They adopted my budget staple binder process where they buy one copy of a somewhat expensive card and then put it in their decks, and they just swap it in and out as they play these different decks. I actually did that yesterday. I had a couple of proxies in, and I pulled them out of one deck and put the, substituted the proxies for the actual cards so that on camera it would look all right. And then, of course, you have, each deck gets its own copy of a card, no proxies, and it's never broken down again. that's the way some people approach it. And we try to serve all of those folks. And Nate, you in particular, you hate the kind of the way...
Hate.
You hate the economy of magic.
Yeah.
And we all have not been shy about our disdain of modern because of its effect on prices. And so we try to serve all of those folks. But some cards are just so powerful. And especially if you're building a particular deck, that to ignore putting that card in just because it's $10, right, is maybe doing yourself a disservice. And yes, the power level of a deck is not the only reason to put a card in. I like to build decks that are flavorful, not necessarily themed or tribal, but have a consistent kind of flavor and are still effective, right? And if you look at a card like Necropotence, it's really hard not to put potence into a black deck, especially a monocolor black deck, because it both embodies everything that is black, which is, you know, from the Dark Confidant card flavor text, greatness at any cost. And its mechanical effect is incredibly powerful. So I just don't see why a person wouldn't put Necropotence in, especially if they have access to it. And yes, it's an $8 card. It's a $9 card, maybe, whenever you listen to it.
So you like it for the theme and the fun, and the budget aspect doesn't bother you?
Well, the budget aspect does not bother me for Necropotence because of the amazing impact it has. And if you're running a staple binder system, then you put Necropotence in the staple binder and then you can swap it in and out of your other black decks. And you're paying the cost of a little bit of setup time because you have to spend the time pulling the cards out and putting the cards in and so on. But again, the value that it provides is probably in excess of its current United States dollar value. So when we approach our value cards, that's something to consider. It's not just value cards as in everything under a buck. It means that a card that provides an incredible amount of utility may be worth the dollar cost. That's all I'm saying. Demonic Tutor almost falls into that.
Is that like 15 now?
It's 15 to 20 bucks, yeah. And again, that's a lot for a single magic card, but considering that you might put it in your staple binder and then use it in any black deck, and the utility that it gives you, which is to say, it gets you the solution to whatever problem is presented to you right now. That's incredible amount of utility. It's a high value card. It happens to cost 20 United States dollars.
Well, let's scale back a second and let's talk about the poor people, as Jason Ault would say. The staple binder only really matters if you're building a lot of decks. So if you only have one deck, then the staple binder doesn't do anything for you.
That's right.
And also, the budget for your deck probably should match the budget for your meta.
That's true.
And there you might get some friction in your local groups because, you know, if somebody breaks out a $200 card and everyone else at the table is just agog at the effects it has on the game, but there might be some resentment among the group that it becomes more of a pay-to-win game as opposed to, you know, something more casual that you can play around the table at any time.
That's true. I guess value is defined by the people you're playing with. I guess the value is defined by the power level of the decks you're playing against, right?
And your own perspective.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and so that's what we're saying. It's not that we look at a limit of $5 or, you know, $10 and say anything under that is value and then anything over it is not value. It's really kind of what your meta can bear and what you can bear in terms of what you think is appropriate. I happen to think that an occasional, you know, really powerful card that costs over $5 is probably worthwhile. It probably gives you decent value, but to each his or her own, especially Ronnie. All right, so what's Ronnie's next point here? Theme?
Theme. For me, powerful cards that could go in any deck usually end up not going into any deck. That's an interesting point. If I'm going to put Solemn Simulacrum into a deck, it had better have an artifact theme or sacrifice theme. Avenger of Zendikar goes in plant or landfall decks. While there are exceptions to my rule, I'm always looking to replace powerful cards with comparable cards, even if less powerful, that suit the theme better.
That's great. we don't ever build theme decks, do we?
I do.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's right.
And it depends on what your deck is trying to do, because sometimes, like, a new commander comes out and you would think, oh, this would be great if there were enough cards for this archetype. Like, for example, before Battle for Zendikar came out, you couldn't really make a good allies deck. But now that Zendikar's happened, ally decks are pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, it's like slivers, because everything of that type that enters the battlefield does something awesome for all the rest of them.
So in the past, would you have tried to build an allies deck that just wasn't quite allies?
I would have tried, and then I would have seen that there wasn't enough cards for it, and I would have done something else.
Right. Now, in your allies deck, do you include Solemn Simulacrum?
Nope. No Solemn Simulacrum in Mardu Allies.
Huh. And that's because he didn't fit the theme.
When I go tribal, I go a lot more tribal than you or Sean do.
Yeah, that could be.
I resist a lot of the good stuff. If there's a theme card that can do it, I'll use the theme card and probably not the other card.
Well, Sad Robot isn't in my Karametra Enchantress deck.
Well, that's because you have Yavimaya Elder and Sakura Tribe Elder instead.
Actually, I don't have either one of those in the Enchantress deck.
What?
Yeah, seriously. No, my thought was, if I'm going Enchantress, I'm going Enchantress. That will give me enough card draw and enough with Karametra as the general. That gives me enough land ramp once I hit that magical threshold of 5 mana. But I kind of think of, you know, Solemn Simulacrum is solemn because he doesn't fit in with the other reindeer.
Okay. No. I had a question. What was the question? How many creatures are in your Karametra deck?
Oh, that's a good question. 27 creatures.
That feels low for Karametra.
It can be, but I tend to squeeze enough basic lands out of it that I start to, that each of my draws tends to start to matter. It might be a little bit low, but I'm playing with enchantment so much, Nate. It's just so much fun.
Fun. Speaking of fun.
Hey.
Ronnie's next point is about fun. I don't play Insurrection in any deck.
Even but Insurrection is fun.
Even my deck, whose theme is to steal creatures and hit people with them. I played it once, won the game from nowhere. Yep, that's what Insurrection does. Yep. And realized that the card wasn't any fun for me or anyone else at the table.
Oh.
He doesn't run Iona or Linvala or Mike and Trike. The Kiki Jiki deck has been stripped of any possible ways of going infinite. I kind of do that too myself.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that playing these cards is wrong, except for Iona, just that I have no fun using them. This is also why I played Jileva Vampire Tribal, because Jileva. It was more fun to try to make that work than to play the more efficient Olivia Valdarin deck. If it's too obvious or too easy, I'm not interested. I kind of felt that way myself with Mizzix, and that's why I made a Mizzix Goblin Tribal that had it focuses on the instances sorceries that create goblin tokens, and so I just make a huge mess of those eventually for free, and then...
And you have the goblin, I think it's a sorcery that has the X, put X goblin tokens into play?
Yeah, I think that's Goblin Rally. No, it's not Goblin Rally. Yeah, so you can take different approaches to that. And I also kind of did that because Mizzix did seem too obvious by an instance and sorceries approach.
Yeah, it really is.
The way that you speak about the format, referencing us, it can sound like you're trying to build the most efficient decks possible, winning machines full of tutors and expensive cards that can crush all oncomers. Oh. I tend to stay away from tutors myself.
Yeah, and really, you're describing Sean.
Yeah.
No, even Sean is backing away from that slightly. But, you know, like he says, his Gyrad deck is vicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And really, I think the point there is we like to play fun decks that are also capable of winning, right? And we had a discussion with someone recently where it just didn't seem like there was any kind of a win con, nor was there any sort of a theme. And the mechanic mismatch was incredible. And we were, well, okay, I was accused of perhaps being too efficient. And I'm like, no, the deck needs to be fun and work. These are not exclusive parameters.
Ronnie also asks, perhaps we could speak more to the Johnny Jenny and Tammy Timmy crowd and a bit less to the Spike crowd sometimes.
So we are definitely not a spiky meta compared to others, and including the ones that, you know, you compare the one that I played with yesterday, and we are in a different, we're playing a different sort of game entirely. I genuinely didn't think we were speaking to anybody except for the Johnny Jennies, Tammy Timmies. We do occasionally speak to Spikes, but usually it's with a British accent.
I'll add that there are some cards that I avoid myself just because I'm sick of seeing them. Like, I don't play Craterhoof Behemoth in decks anymore, and I don't play Muldrifter just because I'm tired of seeing those cards. They show up all the time.
Yeah, I admit I don't play Muldrifter very much, but I do play Craterhoof whenever I'm playing a green tokens deck. Guilty. All right. So Ronnie, let us know if that answered your questions, and by all means, just write in and let us know if we didn't, if we got something wrong, if we mischaracterized something. This next one is a more recent email that we got, but it's thematic and kind of belongs here. The title for this one, Controlling Spikes. That's my title. Jesse Durant, who also follows us on Twitter. Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
I attended the Melbourne GP to play some Commander side events. Oh, man, maybe I should adopt an Australian accent for this one. What do you think?
If you can pull it off, go ahead. Even if you can't, go ahead.
All right, let me see. In one of my games, I played a friend of mine who had built a delicately crafted Gyrad deck that definitely outclassed the table and destroyed us through tutoring and combos before people even had their commanders out.
Sounds familiar.
I am a super casual player, playing only Commander and the odd pre-release, and I had to admit I was a bit salty about having this game finish in under 20 minutes. The game didn't feel fun to me or the other two losers, partly I suspect because we had waited an hour to play and the side events cost money.
Yikes.
Crikey. The Gyrad player, however, was over the moon. His deck did exactly what he wanted. Afterwards, I was thinking to myself, whose fun is more important? Is my enjoyment of a slow, casual Tammy game of Magic more valid than that of a Spike for whom the victory is more important than the journey? How do you recommend handling games where you can't control the meta or where there are players with a different level of skill or budget to the rest? Is it fair to ask these players to build a weak deck and, in effect, have less fun? Jesse from Melbourne, Australia. Well, hello, Jesse. And hopefully I captured your voice properly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. The way I would handle this is if somebody pulls out a deck or basically combos off before anybody can get a even a commander out, I would just say, hey, congratulations. You won this awesome. You won this game. That's awesome. We're going to keep playing Magic over here. Right. And that's, you can do that if there's no prize support, if there's no prize on the line or whatever. And I think that if you're going to a public venue, say a convention or a GP or something, someplace where they're playing Magic and maybe having a little contest, you kind of have to expect that the people are going to show up with their true A games, right? The other players are going to show up with their true A games. And so you kind of have to expect to be able to stop the Gyrad deck when it goes off, or, you know, you're going to see a lot of Narsets.
Mm-hmm. I think the key is that once the side events, or once an event costs money to enter and there's prize support, then you have to expect that the spike level of all the rest of the participants is going to go up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely valid. It's one of the reasons why the prototype tournament rules that I put out kind of enforce the table rules we tend to use, which is low on combo and low on extra turns, right? And it's up to the tournament organizer or the side event organizer to ensure that the behavior that people want is sort of reflected in those rules. Now, it does get complicated. It's hard to enforce, and it opens up a whole new can of worms. But the alternative is to say it's open and then watch as, you know, Narset combos out on turn three and you're done.
And also, if you're waiting for an hour for an event, you can play a game during that time.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, I forgot to mention this. We played a game the other day. It was six people at a game shop, and it was just right around the time of the Commander's Summit. It's when Andy Hull was out in Los Angeles, and we were all playing at a game shop. And we, no joke, were yelling at each other, not just me and Andy, but everybody at the table was like, come on, go, what's taking you so long? And it was like, I'm playing a land. You know, it was that level of, and it wasn't done unpleasantly. It was done as a joke, and everybody got into the spirit of it. Six players, clear victor, 20 minutes, and they were not optimized decks. And it was amazing.
Wow. How did you kill five people in 20 minutes?
Oh, it was a fray. Let me tell you, we just went at it and hammered each other. There were probably no control decks, and if they were, they were among the first people eliminated. Yeah, that was exciting. I really enjoyed that game. All right. So Jesse, again, write to us. Let us know if we mischaracterized anything. Let me know how the accent did. I have to say that was my first Australian accent on the air. Coach me. Nate, guess what time it is?
Time for prize giveaway?
It is, in fact, time for a prize giveaway. You nailed it. We're going to go to iTunes. We've randomly generated a number, and that number is, in this case, 7. So I'm going to go to iTunes, count down. Again, I've sorted by most recent. So, yes, it's R. Blaz. Congratulations, R. Blaz. You have won 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. So write to us and let us know where to send them. R. Blaz writes, great EDH podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you, R. Blaz. It's difficult to find good, intelligent discussion on the EDH game. Wait, did he get the podcast wrong?
Good, intelligent discussion.
Oh, no, he's talking about us. Well, we didn't offer that. Bonus content, intelligent discussion. Sorry. It's difficult to find good, intelligent discussion on the EDH game we love so much. Fortunately, there is this podcast. These guys know their stuff, and the discussions are entertaining and informative. A must listen. Thank you, R. Blaz. I think we said he, but that may be a mistake. It could be he or she, who knows. Thank you so much. The review was awesome. Love these things. Wow, I'm starting to realize that we're giving these these packs away so that we have an opportunity to read these and feel good, Nate. All right. So, R. Blaz, write to us. Let us know where to send those. Oh, God. Oh, this next one. How do you want to deal with this next one, Nate?
Oh, is this another Phyrexian apology letter?
Yeah, trying to get me to play Phyrexian cards.
All right, I'll give it a shot. So Eric Sapolsky says that Elish Norn isn't Phyrexian. What? Now, I am prepared to offer an argument that, while New Phyrexia is indeed bad, that Elish Norn is working against Yawgmoth's original version of New Phyrexia and is in fact a sleeper agent created by Urza's Gambits in case Phyrexia should ever rise again.
It's kind of shocking that Urza had multiple Gambits. I guess that card-throwing ability is pretty good.
So let's see. White is the enemy color of black. It's an enemy color of black, which was Yawgmoth's color to such a degree that he ended up manifesting as a death cloud of black mana.
Ah, true, true. It was a dangerous time.
White is also the color of the last person Urza trusted to stop Yawgmoth, Mr. Gerard. Since Urza knows that the two colors are diametrically opposed. Elish Norn also reflects that since Yawgmoth wanted to rule and mm-hmm. dominate over everything mm-hmm. and sleep with Rebek.
What?
But Elish Norn wants the world to be unified and thus ending all of the battles across the plain.
Good point, actually. Elish Norn is sort of the unifier, isn't she?
She also doesn't abide by the father of machines as a ruler like Yawgmoth was, but rather a figurehead, and that could mean that she only tolerates the title in keeping with tradition as White is wont to do.
Or maybe it's just down with the patriarchy. No?
She is not welcoming our new robot overlords?
Well, it's the father of machines. Maybe if it were the mother of machines, she would have gone for it.
That's why we need the Thopter Queen.
Ah, yes, Thopter Queen.
Let's see. Elish killed the Black Praetor, Shaeldred.
Ethan, that's for you, by the way.
And Shaeldred, whose ability of corruption is very similar to Yawgmoth's conversion of the Thran and his own prisoners. Number four, her ability is the closest thematically to any of the... What?
She killed Shaeldred?
Did she? I didn't read that story. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and read it.
Where is that story? What story is that?
Most of that actually is available online.
All right.
Yeah, I'll have to go read that.
All right. Point four, Elish Norn's ability is the closest thematically to any of the pieces of the legacy weapon, the Might Stone and Weak Stone, to be specific. The Might Stone was used by Urza to bolster his own force. Elish gives her allies +2/+2, while Mishra used the Weak Stone to weaken his enemies, and Elish gives her enemies -2/-2. And Urza had both stones for eyes once he became a planeswalker. So through using the abilities of the stones, it's a little bit of Urza living on in Elish Norn.
I don't know. It's hard to say there, because Mishra was at least... Mishra, of course, was a tool of the Phyrexians, so...
It's a weak sauce tool.
All right, go on. I might be convinced. It's not like Vorinclex. Vorinclex is clearly not Phyrexian.
But he's green, and you like that.
Well, and also he totally stands against everything that Phyrexia represents, and Urabrask. So I guess I could play a Gruul. Oh, never mind. Go on.
Number five, Urza knew that there were Phyrexian-controlled planes beyond just Phyrexia and artificial planes he couldn't find. So he needed some way to fight Phyrexians should they crop up again and continue his legacy.
Wait, is that true too? That Urza knew that there were other Phyrexian-controlled planes?
I don't know.
Well, there was Wrath. This bears investigation.
Number six. Finally, given that she uses white mana and opposed the Praetor who was closest to Yawgmoth, speaking of Shaeldred, is she really a Phyrexian? She has the oil in her, but Urza put the Heartstone dripping oil into Karn, and he's not a Phyrexian. Is he? Is he technically? I don't know. The citizens of Mirrodin were partially metal because of the mycosynth, which was metal fungus mixed with a glistening oil, and they aren't Phyrexians, or they weren't, are they? I don't know. Elish Norn doesn't believe in any of the teachings being passed around the machine orthodoxy, and says as much in her bio on the mothership. I posit that Elish Norn is, in fact, a sleeper agent who worked her way up the ranks of the machine orthodoxy in order to kill the rest of the Praetors and ultimately destroy New Phyrexia from the inside.
Dun, dun, dun!
That's quite a theory there.
I think this is the very definition of specious.
I mean, my theory on who Supreme Leader Snoke is more solid than this theory.
Well, you can't really blame Eric for trying, but I don't think I don't think I buy it. I just don't think I buy that Elish Norn is the antithesis of Phyrexia. I think Elish Norn is a facet of the Phyrexian ethos and methodology.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. But yeah. I don't mind playing Phyrexians.
Oh, God.
especially when it brings that reaction to the table. That one right there.
You are a cruel man, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
You have a five-color Phyrexian Praetor deck, don't you?
Nope. I have many five-color decks, but Phyrexian Praetor is not a theme.
Hmm. Okay, Eric, thank you very much. Your attempt to convince us that Elesh Norn is not Phyrexian is it's a powerful argument, but I think ultimately it's very difficult to argue that Elesh Norn in some way opposes Phyrexia. I think Elesh Norn represents the unity of Phyrexia. Still appealing. All right. Nate, are you ready for our next one? I'll read this one.
Go for it.
All right. This next one, I will try to read it without a sneer creeping into my voice. I've entitled this Love for Melek. Jonathan Landreth, also on Twitter. Hi, Jonathan. Writes, hey guys, first of all, I love the cast. I'm curious, however, about the contempt for Melek as a commander. Based on the dialogue of the most recent episode, it seems like Phil witnessed an underwhelming build while he was in his previous playgroup. Honestly, if that's the case, I'm not really surprised. Based on statements I've heard on another show, such as, why would you want a Plague Wind in your deck? Or, I generally run around 33 lands. Or, Card X is too expensive. I feel some groups think a bit too small for the format overall, let alone a legend such as Melek, who demands to be abused in a very go-big-or-go-home sort of way. I agree with the sentiment that drawing 33 cards and not having a win condition is not the way to go. In actuality, I tend to focus more on library manipulation than traditional card draw in my build. Cards in my hand are less important than the card on top of my library.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Just as an example to summarize the point I've been trying to make, my last game with Melek, my route to victory was through putting four copies of Clone Legion onto the stack using Stryonic Resonator and Mirari.
All right.
Copying the best board state times four and winning from there by overpowering my two remaining opponents. I wonder how you did that. I can send you my list if you'd like. I also would be down if you guys would be interested in recording a deck tech or something like that. Maybe. Maybe. Certainly send us the list and we'll figure out how to do a deck tech. That sounds like an incredible board state. And so, Jonathan, I'm not surprised that you were able to win, and I think it's wonderful. And the question is, could you have done that or similar or more effectively with another commander? I don't know. Maybe. I think Mizzix is still a better commander for that color and for those effects. Melek is great inside of Mizzix.
He could have done it with Riku, though.
True, he could have done it with Riku. Actually, each of those with Stryonic Resonator and Mirari. Well, I don't know, Nate. What do you think?
I like Riku better. Melek costs six.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main problem.
Even though Riku costs five.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really...
It's that big a difference, really.
It is. It is. Because six means you're not casting Melek until turn seven or eight, especially in red and blue. Whereas with Riku, you're casting Riku by turn four or five.
Hmm.
Thank you, Green. Thank Green, Nate.
Thank you, Green.
Jonathan goes on to say, I can send you my list if you'd like. I also would be down if you guys would be interested in recording a deck tech or something like that. Yeah, that's a possibility. Send us the list. We'll take a look at it. The recording a deck tech is a little bit more complicated, but maybe we can figure out how to do that. And it seems like there are enough Melek fans that we should do a deck tech on a decent Melek deck. It would be our second ever deck tech. The first one, of course, being Dragonlord Silumgar from episode one. Also, I assume the three of you play together online. Do you use Magic the Gathering online or a different program? Do you ever play with listeners? Well,
yeah, we do.
We actually play test, to be clear. We're play testing a lot of decks. We do that because we need to understand something for the show. And some of us are actually buying cards once we settle on a particular deck formula.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. Maybe to the detriment of our personal finances or our children's futures. So, but we do use a different application for deck testing because Magic the Gathering Online requires that you spend some money, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You should be spending money on Magic. We use an application called Cockatrice. We talk all about that in our tech episode, and I'll make sure to include a link to that show in our show notes. And, Nate, do we ever play test with listeners?
Yep.
We certainly do. We have an active and vibrant playtest group, and these are all people who sought us out and have managed to play games with us. And so I encourage anybody who wants to play games with us, kind of watch each of our individual Twitter feeds, and of course, make sure you send contact requests to commanderin.mtg.podcast on Skype. And there seems to be some sort of problem. We've gotten reports that a few people have sent us requests and we haven't gotten them, so we'll do what we can. Thanks, Jonathan. Let us know if we got anything inaccurate and just continue to send us more cool email. Nate, guess what time it is?
I have no idea.
It's time for another giveaway, Nate.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, number 18.
Luco Brazzi says, great personalities talking about a great format. You can tell these guys really enjoy doing it. I guess so. As someone who is relatively new to Commander and does not have time or inclination to trudge through deck lists on forums, this podcast has been an entertaining way to bone up on the format. With bones. Bones of your enemies. I added that last part. He didn't write that.
Oh, he didn't write that?
No.
Huh, what a surprise.
Luco Brazzi.
Well, thank you very much, Luco. This was wonderful to read. We really appreciate it. We do enjoy doing this, and the best part for us is always interacting with listeners, right? Whether it's playtesting or, you know, reading these five-star reviews. There's a couple on Podbay FM that have made us chuckle, and thank you very much for leaving this review. So, Luco, write to us, and if you've got a United States, Canadian, or Great British address, we'll be happy to send you cards. Outside of that, it might be a little bit difficult, so.
I think that's a character from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Oh, it's spelled a little differently.
Yeah, Luca, right?
Yeah, Luca Brasi.
Yeah.
He gets whacked. Spoiler.
Spoilers.
Too soon?
Maybe that's a little too soon. I mean, that was released only 29 years ago, right? Hard to know. All right. So, this next one I've given a title is Angel Tribal a Thing? And it's Andres Rosa writes, love your podcast. It's surreal. I'm very much enjoying it. It's surreal. Awesome. Does he imagine us floating in a blue landscape, Nate?
Calendar alligator pork chop.
You got a listener for as long as you keep putting up content. Why, thank you, Andres. We appreciate it. And I apologize, actually, in the lag in getting to you. We've read this a couple of months ago. I started playing Magic in 2010, and then I got disappointed with Standard. Took a hiatus only to learn that there are a lot of other formats. So when learning about EDH and playing it, I fell in love. I understand completely. Well, long story short, I am in need of your experience point of view. I started hearing the Command podcast. Not sure which one you mean there. And they mentioned that mono white and Commander is not feasible, nor fun, if you want to win. I took it as a challenge, so having collected every angel in the history of Magic, I decided to build a mono-white angel tribal. I know, the folly of noobs. I built a version of it, and I want to make it competitive. You know, that 80% or so. Would you take a look? He goes on to write, Nate, after providing the link to his deck, I am looking to get these into the deck. Emiria Shepherd, Herald of the Host,
yep.
Righteous Confluence, Dawnbreak Reclaimer.
What does that do?
I don't know. Let's look it up. on the internet.
Dawn break reclaimer.
We've been doing this together for a while. At the beginning of your end step, it's a creature angel. At the beginning of your end step, choose a creature card in an opponent's graveyard. Then that player chooses a creature card in your graveyard. You may return those cards to the battlefield under their owner's control.
I don't like it.
And it's from Commander 2015.
I don't like it.
Yeah, but you like it if you've exiled your opponent's graveyard.
Hmm. Yeah, that is something that Mono White could do.
You could with Tormod's Crypt.
Yeah. No, I mean, Mono White is pretty good at exiling graveyards. And exiling in general.
Yeah.
I think the problem that I have with Angel Tribal is they all cost a lot of mana.
Yeah, they do.
They cost at least 5, usually 6, 7, 8 mana. And Mono White has trouble getting that much mana at, you know, before it gets clobbered. Yeah, so Tithe, Land Tax, Weather Wayfarer. But there really aren't that many ways for White to ramp up. You don't have much of an effect in the game until it's almost over. If all of your creatures are going to be huge.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What about artifacts? You use, of course, the lands for the colored mana, so you're playing planes and other sources of white. But then you put every artifact in that generates mana in your colors, including, of course, colorless. So Soul Ring, Thought Vessel, Mana Vault.
Loads of mana rocks. Those.
Yeah, lots of rocks. I think you can get up that hill, maybe faster than it seems. I don't. I'd have to look again at in detail at his list. But that, so that's the first recommendation: is put all the mana rocks in, and you better be running land tax as well. Because there will be a green player that always has more land than you, so you might as well be squeezing your deck of the basic lands.
If you really want Angel Tribal to be effective, I would not go mono white. I would go Kalia with some human cleric support. Just so you have some, you know, 2 and 3 drops that can still be useful.
That's a good point. And there are some good clerics out there.
Yeah. I mean, the deck will mostly be white. If you're doing an Angel Tribal with Kalia and human clerics.
Right. But in a sense, do you even care about casting Kalia?
Oh, yeah, because she can get the angels out there.
So you go, instead of mono white Angel Tribal, you go Angel Tribal with Kalia as the commander. Again, a very expensive commander.
Yeah.
And don't put any demons or dragons in, no matter how tempting it is, but then put all of the black, red, white angels in.
Yeah, you could add Tariel the Reckoner.
Yeah.
She's fun.
All right. Well, I don't know if that addresses Andre's direct question.
Yeah.
So the answer to how do you play mono white angel tribal is play Mardu angel tribal.
I guess we could take that as a challenge and make one.
Yeah, I guess it could. He ended his email with, "Help me, Commander and podcast crew. You're my only hope." And I guess we're not providing much hope, are we?
There might be hope. I'd have to look into it more.
Well, thanks again, Andres. Sorry that we couldn't help you with mono white tribal. I mean, I guess we did. We just said make sure you get up the mana curve fast because otherwise you're going to be dead meat to the other people at the table.
I'll give it a shot.
All right. Wow, it'll be so weird with you playing mono white angels, but I know it's going to be hateful.
Yep.
All right. Oh, speaking of hateful, this next one is right up your alley.
Mindslaver, card of evil? Timothy Holland writes in, says, "First of all, I wanted to say, keep up the good work, guys. I really enjoyed the last episode with Ethan Fleischer. It was awesome and really informative." That was a good episode.
That was a really good episode.
"And a previous episode you guys did for Thanksgiving was hilarious, and I actually had to stop what I was doing because I was laughing so hard."
Way to go. That's great. Nate, that what that's saying is people love your theme decks.
Excellent. Excellent.
Which, by the way, kicked my butt on a couple occasions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turkey Tribal.
Mm-hmm. That they do. Anyway, Timothy has a bit of a question situation he would like to get some guidance on. For Christmas this year, one of my buddies who works at a game shop decided to get everyone a card for their commander deck. That's sweet.
That is nice.
One of my deck is an altered version of the 2014 mono red deck with Doretti Scrap Savant as the general. My good friend bought me a Mind Slaver card for Christmas this year. Now, I got a lot of games in over the break and have noticed the people I play with complaining a lot about this card.
Wow, you think so?
A couple of games, I got down to the last two players and I pretty much used this card to take over the other player's turn forever, causing them to concede. Actually, one time I got Doretti's ultimate off and managed to take over the rest of the player's turns and cause the other three guys to concede. It's almost gotten to the point where it's almost no fun for the other when I use this card, besides how much I like it. However, they don't really have any answers for it or put anything in their decks to deal with it. Also, I don't want to just take it out because it was a present from a good friend.
Yeah.
I know you guys do the watch list cards, and basically these are situations you talk about, so I was hoping you could give me some guidance. Well, we could... Maybe we could have a watch list about Mindslaver.
Mindslaver...
We should have Sean for that, though.
Yeah, we should have Sean for that. Yeah, but Mindslaver is actually worthy. This is a card that does get abused, and when it gets abused properly, it's hard to get around. And by hard to get around, I mean it's impossible to get around. Let's get to answering Tim. Thanks for listening, Tim, and thanks for writing such an awesome question. This is cool. I responded to you quickly in emails. I responded to you quickly in email, and now Nate and I will give you hopefully a more in-depth response. The first thing to note, Mind Slaver is absolutely a brutal card. Now, of course, it's a fine Mirin card with a fine Mirin watermark, and so it should be played whenever possible. That said, it draws a tremendous amount of hate. Most of the times I've seen it played, you have to use it as soon as it's cast because of the amount of hate it draws and the amount of not counter spells but countering effects brought to play against it. So that means you have to have 10 mana total. Remember that you have to have priority after a spell resolves on your turn, because otherwise it's done. Because this card exists, Krosan Grip, right? For 2 and a green, an instant with split second, and that's the important part. As long as this spell is on the stack, players can't cast spells or activate abilities that aren't mana abilities. So what it says is, hey, this is the last spell being cast until all of these resolve. And, of course, its primary effect is destroy target, artifact, or enchantment. This is a great way to eliminate any problematic artifact or enchantment that has some sort of voluntary, quasi-infinite or terrible effect. Terrible being separate from quasi-infinite. So when somebody puts the Mind Slaver into play, if they do not have priority or haven't been able to activate it right away, you need to plow ahead and zap it with the Krosan Grip, because split second will make sure that they can't do it.
Is that the only answer, though?
I'm not sure, truthfully.
If you're in black, you could do some instant speed exile on their graveyard so they can't recur it.
Right, right. As soon as, so they would get one turn, but they wouldn't be able to do it again. It's tough, man. When Mindslaver comes out, it's basically do or die time. And if you're in a red or red-blue or even blue artifact recursion deck, then it's not going to be easy to recover from that.
Oh, there's some more preemptive ways. Your meta could run things like Denying Wind or Nightmare Incursion.
That's
or
right.
Sadistic Sacrament.
That's true. That's true.
And then you play those and you say, hey, do you have a Mind Slaver in here? No, you don't.
Even if they do, no, they don't. Right. So, I mean, the short answer is your meta can answer this threat, but it's not going to be easy. And just like Nate brought up, you know, if you're waiting until 10 mana to cast this, and you kind of have to, right? Denying Wind is a thing. Maybe they've been able to tutor for their Krosan Grip. So it's kind of on their, I don't know, Nate, what do you think? Is it on his meta to respond to this?
If they're all complaining about it, then he probably won't have a playgroup long
unless he gets rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah, even as a gift to a friend, that might be something that you pull out of your deck, especially if your group is complaining. And at the same time, you know, Jester's Cap, Denying Wind, all of the cards that Nate mentioned, counter spells, no one likes doing it.
Nevermore.
Nevermore, right?
Would Pithing Needle work, or is that something else? As Pithing Needle enters the battlefield, name a card. Activated abilities of sources with a chosen name can't be activated.
Yeah, that's
unless
great.
Unless they're mana abilities.
So Pithing Needle is a very easy answer. They can drop that on their turn 4 or 5 when you're about ready to cast this Mindslaver. And they just cast Pithing Needle and name Mindslaver, and then what are you going to do? Well, you're not going to cast Mindslaver, that's for sure. Well, you're not going to activate it, that's for sure.
There are a very few specific ways to deal with Mindslaver, and your meta could start adding those very specific removal cards just to counter your specific attack, or they might just kick you out of the group.
Yep.
Which might happen.
Well, and to be fair, those specific removal cards are not just specific to Mindslaver. Now, you might have a Krosan Grip because of Mindslaver or the threat of Mindslaver, but it's also great for whacking all sorts of infinite combos that use enchantments or artifacts.
Yep.
Well, good luck. Please do write to us, Timothy, and let us know how your meta responds, assuming they're still your meta. Nate, you know what time it is.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, is it prize time?
It's prize time.
Prize time!
All right, we're going to stay with Podbay FM, and we're going to go to number 34.
All right, number 34. Not Cody Smith. Says Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG players rejoice. Finally, a podcast about the newest and best 100-card singleton format for the country's fastest growing and most popular game, Yu-Gi-Oh! What?
I think it's Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yu-Gi-Oh! I've seen the cartoon, I think.
Yeah. And we remember this one.
And then
too.
It became like a math class. In the middle of the cartoon, a very dramatically worded math class.
Yeah.
I was quite skeptical of the format at first, as well as the inclusion of a non-American co-host. But the singleton form factor of this format really takes the edge of your seat action you'd expect from Yu-Gi-Oh! And bogs it down to a snail's pace. The strategies of laying down traps and hitting your unsuspecting opponent for thousands of damage per turn is a thing of the past. Hey, no, it's not.
Nope.
3-hour long games are the new norm. Features of this podcast include witty banter, clever deck list for those with no originality. I'm looking at you, Carl. Yeah, Carl. Ads by soft drink companies. I genuinely hope that you subscribe to this podcast, as the hosts promised to help with my rent if enough of you subscribe. # save me from eviction. I don't remember saying any of those things.
Yeah, that was new. This review might have been edited since the first time we read it, actually. And truthfully, it was randomly selected, but I am quite pleased that this person who is not Cody Smith, let's be clear, is now eligible to win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. So thanks a lot, not Cody Smith. Send us your cast@commander@mtg.com.
Wait, are they eligible to win or do they win?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're right. They win. I don't know why I said eligible to win. Oh, well, they're eligible, but they have to have a United States, Canadian, or Great British address. And,
oh, snap.
Oh, snap. And so write to cast@commander@mtg.com. Let us know your address. You can also, so that's great. And that was totally random. That was... But again, Nate and I were sort of talking about it, and really like this one, really like this review anyway. So to be able to give you a prize pack for it is awesome. Hey, so this next one comes to us from a friend of the show, Robin Koss, and he also is one of the people who's donated to us on Patreon, by the way.
All right.
This one's title is The Weatherlight Crew, and he says, If you all were members of the Weatherlight crew, which positions would you hold on board the ship, and do you think the ship would have survived long enough to stop the Phyrexians? All the best, Robin. Huh. Well, that's an excellent question, Robin.
I would be the bombardier.
Would you?
Sure. I want to drop the bombs.
Bombinating, so to speak. Wow, who are these people? We have Commander Gerard Capation. Capation? Capation. Captain Sisse, Hannah, ship's navigator, Tongarth, first mate, Orim, the healer, Urtai, wizard, Karn, engineer, Miri, deckhand soldier, poor Miri, Krovax, Windgrace, he goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's a deckhand sometimes, slash
Miri
soldier.
Sometimes goes bad. Depends on which timeline you look at.
That's right. Rofelos. Oh, we'll have to have that on our pronunciation show.
Why? He's banned.
Well, why not? It's a fun name. Rofeos, maybe.
But you can't play him in Commander.
But you can say him.
But why would you?
To say he's banned. You have to know how he's pronounced in order to say he's banned. Stark Ilvek, another deckhand guide. Squee! Multani, no, Squee is, of course, cabin boy. Multani Morrow, sorcerer. Previous members, Joira.
Ooh.
Former captain. Look at that. Teferi. How do you pronounce that? See, that's another one on the pronunciation. Teferi. I would probably choose Teferi. The T guy, because A, planeswalker, B, time manipulator.
What? Was that a sentence?
Yeah, A and B. What?
Okay, go ahead.
A, planeswalker, B, time manipulator.
Okay.
C, your enemies get defeated.
I will see my enemies get defeated.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go, Robin. Sean, I'm sure. What do you think Sean would be?
Urtai.
Yeah.
He'd be sitting in the corner being sarcastic at everyone while they're doing their jobs.
Yeah. And Urtai's all Esper anyway.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yep. He wouldn't be Squee. $20 and he'll do anything. No, I think you're right about Urtai. All right.
So who's the bombardier? How can they run a ship without a bombardier?
There are many crew members who were killed, apparently, for the sake of the storyline.
Mm.
Maybe it's one of them. Like Ineka Termulin, who died during a fight with Predator. We are, by the way, looking at the Gamepedia on MTG Salvation.
Hmm.
Oh, hey, and there's Stivale, who was present during the crew's quest to save Sisse from Volrath.
That's great. Good job, guy, lady, Stivale. Let's see, out of that group that you named, I like Joira the most.
I like Joira the most, too.
Because Joira drops bombs, and they fall through the sky for 4 turns and then land.
Maybe fewer turns.
Maybe.
Yeah, Jora's got a bug. Yeah, that's a good call. Jora, bomb dropper. You ready for this next one? This next one comes from someone we know. Someone else we know from Twitter.
What is this word here?
Underrated-ager? I didn't come up with the best titles, but I came up with titles.
Okay. Whatever. Johnny Crass asks, who is the most underrated or underplayed legend of the last 3 years, and why should we see more of them?
Mm-hmm. Wow. 3 years. 3 years.
How would you get that information? Let's see. So well, what are all the sets in the last 3 years?
Right. Oh, but there's so many. It goes all the way back to the Ravnica block, Return to Ravnica block. Well, let's just limit it to Theros. So we get Theros, Khan's block, Battle for Zendikar block, plus Origins, plus M15, plus M14, plus the commander sets, M13, M14, M15. Sorry, C13, C14, C15. And then there's Modern Masters 1 and 2 and Conspiracy. I would say most underrated is probably Grenzo. I'll just go with that.
What?
Yeah. Grenzo is most underrated. People like Grenzo because, you know, I was playing a Conspiracy Chaos draft with a bunch of Commander players. And when I drafted Grenzo and actually got him into play and it was awesome, people were like, I said, yeah, this makes a pretty good commander. And they were like, really? And I said, yeah, you need to listen to our Christmas episode. But none of them had ever even seen Grenzo played. Whereas I know for certain there was a Tassiger at the table, right? And yeah, so I would say he is probably most underrated.
What about Karametra?
Karametra is definitely underrated. But people have heard of her in use before. Maybe it's because it was a Theros block card as opposed to a Conspiracy card, and people don't associate Conspiracy with Commander as much. I don't know. And it's hard for me to say that because I play Karametra.
So you've seen your opponents respect your commander when it comes onto the field?
Well, what's funny is the first time most people play against Karametra, they're like, whatever. and then, of course, Karametra explodes on about turn 7 or 8.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I lost track when I started thinking about Karametra again. I got all dreamy-eyed. Yeah, she's probably underrated. You're probably right. Maybe Xenagod?
Oh, he's not underrated.
He's not underrated.
Phoenix might be.
Yeah, that's true. Have you seen a successful Phoenix deck? You built one, didn't you?
Yeah.
How did it work? Would you prefer that over Lazav or back to Lazav?
If I want a mill, I prefer my Mare Bear. Because if you got a mill, you got to exile the graveyards too.
Yeah, you do.
And white helps out with that.
Mm-hmm.
So for mill decks, I prefer Esper over Dimir. Although it's going to be using a lot of Dimir cards.
Yeah, your Mare Bear is frightening. All right, so I think we've answered Johnny's question. Maybe Sean has a totally different opinion. Which brings us to our last prize giveaway, doesn't it? Also, completely randomly, just like the Commander's Brew did, it looks like we've selected Johnny Crass to win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. Oh my goodness. How random is that? That's crazy. Who could have thought that would happen? Johnny's 5-star... Oh, now that I read this... No, maybe we'll just have to revoke that. So, Johnny, don't bother to send us your email, your snail mail address. Johnny Crass writes on iTunes. He gives us a 5-star rating, but it's entitled All Hail Phyrexia.
Yeah, it is.
Soon, this podcast shall gain great perfection. Was this review helpful? I'm going to click no.
I can't wait for an email from some listener with the depths of twisted logic trying to convince Phil that Jyn Gitaxias is not Phyrexian.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that. That's impossible. Wow. So, yeah, Johnny randomly selected to win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. So send us your physical mailing address and we'll get that in the post. We'll send that all the way down to San Diego. All right. Nate, it's almost the end of the show.
It's almost the end of the show.
Hopefully it's clear we love our listeners and our viewers. Don't forget we have a YouTube channel. Every week it bears repeating, Nate. They're fun. They tell us what they think, and they even playtest decks with us. It's awesome. Johnny, I know you're waiting to playtest decks with us. We're trying to get you online. I don't know why we keep messing it up, but we do. Everybody else, in the meantime, please take the time to contact us. Johnny, you too. You contact us once or twice. And if a day, do that, please. And if, no, everyone else and Johnny, please take the time to contact us. And if you really like us, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It makes us feel better, and we can point to it and say, hey, look at that, to the people who care about such things, because some people actually do care about those. We do, obviously, but I mean other people who might maybe want to send us prizes and whatnot to give away. And it feels really good. Did we mention that once or twice?
Yep.
Our theme song. Who is our theme song created by?
Me.
Yay. Nate Burgess created our theme song and all variations thereof. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly. And by the way, we're going to be doing some fancy things with our logo. Special thanks to the tech whizzes Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. And of course, very special thanks go out to all our patrons on Patreon, especially Robin, Alex, Bradford, and Jackie, J-A-C-I-I. Thank you very much. We really appreciate the support. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderinmtg.com. There's a fancy new Patreon button up there too, by the way, Nate. Our email address is, well, you know, we had people asking, like, how do we get there? And it's really kind of awkward to post the link every time we need to. So now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you just go to our website and there it is. Big ol' P. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com. You can find us on all the social medias, almost all, by searching for CommanderinMTG Podcast. And again, if you want to play test decks with us, commanderin.mtg.podcast on Skype. Individually on Twitter, I'm at KetJack.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Sean, of course, is at Copain26. One more thing, folks. We once again have my daughter, Jessica, and my son, Logan, opening packs of Oath of the Gatewatch and reading those cards to us. And not reading them as in reading the words. They're going to be looking at the mana cost, telling us their mana cost with all the ghost pieces and some new mana symbols, perhaps, but spoilers. And, of course, trying to describe the artwork. You have to guess all 15 cards, each of them references, and we'll do them individually. So you can enter the contest for Jessica, you can enter the contest for Logan. And the people who get all 15 cards correct out of those packs will be eligible to win a Commander and Playmat. That's right, your very own Commander and MTG Podcast Playmat. So please, listen closely in the next few minutes after the song and write them down and then send them to us at cast@commanderinmtg.com. Again, that email address is very important, cast@commanderinmtg.com. Nate, you're going to play too, right?
Sure.
You're not eligible to win, though. Right.
Boo.
But it's always fun. All right.
And that's our show.
Yay!
Commanderin.
Hi, folks. Thanks for sticking with us, and let's go over the rules to the contest just one more time. To enter, you must live in the United States, Canada, or Europe, and send email to cast@commanderinmtg.com before noon Pacific time on the 25th of March, 2016. The subject must read Jessica OGW Contest. If you're entering to win in the contest with Jessica reading the cards, We get enough entries that we're going to be pretty ruthless about the subject of the email. Here's the way to win. Your email must include the names of all the cards you're guessing. You have to guess them in the correct order, the way Jessica has read them. Three of the listeners who get 11 or more cards correct will be selected to win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. One listener, one lucky listener, who gets all 16 cards, the 14 common, uncommon, and rare cards, the basic land, and the token correct, will win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch and a Commander in MTG podcast playmat. It's awesome. Now let's hear Jessica read the cards.
Here we go. Ready? Bam, 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 bam. Ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding.
Are you doing the Commander in song?
I'm just making up a song.
Do you have to bang the door?
Yes.
That should be.
You have to bang the door and Logan's drink at the same time. I see.
That should be the theme song for this episode.
All right. So
form into banjo.
Oh, God. So as you can hear, I'm here with my 2 children.
Hello.
Yes.
Jessica and Logan.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Jessica.
Hello.
And Logan.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, well, okay. And
this is so weird.
We have here a shiny new Oath of the Gatewatch Fat Pack. Let me shake it. Oh, you hear that?
Yeah.
It's not even opened yet, is it?
No.
Okay, so why don't we? Why don't
I mean, except
Jessica
for those
peel
right
a little
there.
Bit there? Oh, yeah, it was probably from Izzy.
Yeah, probably Izzy.
Can you?
Izzy's
open?
Our new cat, by the way.
Izzy's our new cat.
She likes and, scratching things.
I have am recovering from food poisoning right now. So any of you following on Twitter and or Facebook know about that. Jessica's sick. Logan is sick.
No, I'm not.
Mentally.
I'm
why don't you pull this off, sick boy? There you go. Give me that.
It's mine.
Give it to me. Thank you.
Mine.
Okay. The plastic wrapper is off. Longtime listeners know what's about to happen. We are about to open packs of magic cards. Jessica and Logan are going to describe those packs of magic cards.
Not the cards inside the inside the packs of magic cards.
I'm going first.
So you are opening the first Oath of the Gatewatch boosters in the DeLuca family.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I want you each to pick one. Let me put them out. And so you see there we have all
the girl.
Of these. The girl. I didn't know you had Tourette's syndrome, but here we are. These are all of the planeswalkers. And so you choose one.
The girl.
Okay, you chose the green girl. Her name is Nyssa. Logan. You chose the white guy. That's Gideon.
Now. He has a glowing yellow hand.
He does. He has a glowing yellow hand.
Now we open.
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
So, Jessica.
Yes.
You're going to go first. But what I want you to do to prepare is I want you to describe the art on the front of that pack.
I have to describe this?
Yes. That's what you're about to do anyway.
Okay. Like how? Like give a hint?
Just talk about that art.
It's an elf lady.
What is she doing?
She's casting magic.
And what does she wear?
I don't really know.
Okay. So,
okay, now can I open it?
Now you can open it. Not you, Logan. Jessica's opening her pack.
Okay, wait. I have the first card.
Okay, lean in close.
Okay, the first card. 2 ghost faces, 1 dewdrop, a alien with magic.
An alien with magic.
Yep. Okay, the second card. 2 ghost pieces, 1 fireball, a girl coming from a, I think it's a girl, a pit of lava? I think.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. One ghost beast, one sunlight, a lion with antlers. Strange. Look at the card.
I see it.
One tree branch. What the heck? Person with roots coming out of his back. I think. That's strange. Okay, two ghost pieces, one skull shard. Demon lady, I think. Does look like a demon. Oh, dear.
We're in the new DeLuca studio, and this is the first time the kids are here, and I just dropped a card, so hold
on. Okay. One skull shard, what's it called? An elf? Yeah, it's an elf. Fighting a monster of a creature thing. One ghost beast, one fireball. Creature with a crossbow with lots of teeth. Zero ghosts. Zero anything, actually. It's a floating island that appears to be inside out or upside down. Like that bone kind of stuff that look kind of like webbing also. A plant is hanging. That's weird. Okay. Four ghost pieces and one dewdrop. A lion lady with wings coming out of her head. And elf ears. That's weird. Oh, I've seen this before. Two ghost pieces. It is a spider statue. Okay. Two ghost pieces and one skull shard. A alien monstrosity that doesn't have a head, really. Okay. Four ghost pieces and one tree branch. A alien magic type thing. Weird. It has antlers as well. One ghost piece, one skull shard, and one fireball. Another alien monstrosity with lots of tentacles. And has that same bone type stuff. Four ghost pieces and one diamond shard, I'm calling it.
Is that what you're calling it?
Yes, a diamond shard.
I'm so glad we got one of these.
Yes. A colorful alien. And then we have do I describe this as well?
Yeah, go ahead and describe that.
Okay. A wind pit. With a dewdrop.
Okay.
And then we have this. A alien type monster. Thing. What? What?
Wow, that is an alien type monster thing.
Look at where its eyes are.
What the heck?
Look at its eyes. Its eyes.
All right. So, did you enjoy that?
Yes. What was wrong with his eyes?
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. What's wrong with his or her eyes? Well, that's just the nature of the Eldrazi. Dun, dun, dun.
How do you know it's even that?
You probably just revealed
it. It
because
is.
It says...
You probably just revealed
I probably
is.
Did, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you no. probably just like...
Don't tell me...
Well, they'll have to tell us which Eldrazi it is.
True.
True.
All right, folks, that was Jessica and her first... Oath of the Gatewatch pack. It probably won't be our last. Okay, welcome back, folks. This next one is more of a challenge. Logan tended to skip straight to the art. So his is a little harder, but the prizes are the same. Let's go over the rules for the contest again. To enter, you must live in the United States, Canada, or Europe and send email to cast@commanderandmtg.com before noon Pacific time on the 25th of March, 2016. The subject of your email should read Logan OGW Contest in order to enter the contest with Logan reading the cards. Once again, we get enough entries that we're going to be ruthless about the subject of the email. Here's the way to win. The body of the email should contain your guesses for the names of the cards that Logan is reading. Three of the listeners who get 11 or more cards correct will be selected to win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch. One listener who gets all 16 of the cards correct, that's right, the 14 common, uncommon, and rare cards, plus the basic land, plus the token, will win 3 packs of Oath of the Gatewatch and a Commander and MTG podcast playmat. You've probably seen how awesome they are in pictures on the Twitter account, so please get all 16 correct so we can pick one of you at random. It'll be awesome. Now let's listen to Logan reading the cards.
Okay, and we're back with Logan now. Logan's going to open his pack of magic cards and do the same thing that Jessica did, which is describe the art and describe the mana costs.
Yep.
Oh, say the okay. mana costs.
Say the mana costs, yeah. Yep, go ahead.
I already started opening it. Beat. Beat running on red lines.
Don't say the mana cost.
Oh, right. And it's 1 fire. 1 fireball.
All right.
A alien beetle thingy doing magic on in a cave / forest.
Okay. Start with the mana cost, though.
All right. One's on light. 3 ghost pieces and a dewdrop. A guy in a hood touching a triangle.
Okay.
3 ghost pieces, that's just a, and 1 tree branch. A lizard of great proportion with a weird spiky tail and wearing a saddle with a weird elf archer guy. 1 ghost piece, 1 skull shard. It's a... don't know how to describe this in a non-morbid way.
You describe it however you want.
All right. Well, it's a corpse that's coming out of the ground with weird goop hanging from it. Actually, that wasn't very morbid. Now that I think about it.
Start with the mana cost.
4 ghost pieces, 2 tree branches. A giant worm! Destroying a town.
It's a literal giant worm.
And by the way, I pronounced it how it was spelled.
Mm-hmm.
2 ghost pieces and 1 tree branch. It's a 4-legged, 4-armed, giant white and red people eater. 4 ghost pieces, 1 fireball. Giant flying boulder people. Of boulders. 1 ghost piece, 1 dewdrop. It's a 2 triangles, 2 pyramid-like triangles with tons of writing on it in the middle of a spiderweb plane, I guess. 5 ghost pieces, 2 dewdrops. It's an alien skeleton that's moving. It's a green girl summoning 2 epic monsters out of geysers? 2 ghost pieces, 1 fireball. It's 3 planeswalkers fighting a demon with the main planeswalker being covered in flames. 1 dewdrop. It's an elephant with spikes. 6 ghost pieces and 1 tree branch. A giant monster! It's a forest of tons of branches. Another weird, thing. It's a... I forget what that creature's called. Well, it has... What? I just noticed where its eyes are. That's weird. It's a weird monster creature on a cliff.
Okay. Wait. Well, there you have it. From first card all the way to token on Logan. Jessica was here for it as well.
All right, and that's our contest. Good luck, everyone. If you're unclear on the rules, hit that little rewind slash back button or whatever it's called on your player and listen again. I've covered the rules twice, minor differences each time, but the same basic rules. Don't forget, if you like shows like this one, mosey on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/commanderinmtg and donate a buck a show or more if you can. We really appreciate everything you can give. The more donations we get, the more contest shows we can host and the more packs we give out. Plus, as you see when you go over to the page, we're offering special reward levels. Our $10 and above patrons will help us to pick the topics for our shows. And, of course, Sean will do anything for $20. That's apocryphal, but I'm sure he'll live up to it. So here's a final word for my kids.
We hope you enjoyed this contest, and good luck to everyone who enters it. Say good luck.
Good luck!
The best of good luck.
If this were YouTube, what would you ask people to do, Jessica?
Comment, rate, and subscribe. Bye!
Boop!
And Logan, what would you say?
Comment, rate, subscribe. Bye!
Wow.
See you next time!
Thanks, kids. You were wonderful.
Bananas!
Just randomly say bananas.
Okay.